Hello, still loading listeners. What you are about to hear is a little bonus episode, a little taste of the stuff I've been doing over on Patreon for over a year and a half. This is the Still Bonding Podcast, which is my monthly James Bond podcast where me and a bunch of friends bond over 007. The last preview I shared of this was all the way back on episode 7, Diamonds Are Forever. So now this is 12 months, basically a full calendar year later. And joining me on this episode to discuss the world is not enough, our friends of the show, Chris, the British Bond Addict over on Instagram, and Kyle Barbeau, also on Instagram as Easy Smiles and Expensive Watches. This was a wonderful conversation. So if you like what you hear and you want to hear more James Bond conversations, there are 19 episodes, including this one, over on the Patreon, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. So if this interests you, please consider checking it out. And with all that covered, let's dive in for a little taste of my conversation with Chris and Kyle on The World Is Not Enough. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Still Bonding, the only James Bond podcast where me and a bunch of friends bond over 007. My name is Josh Koval, and I'm the host of Still Bonding. I mean, as you know, you're all wonderful patrons, so if you don't know who I am, that's very shocking. But you know what? If you don't, welcome. Anyway, I'm rambling already. We're off to a great start. This episode is on The World Is Not Enough, Pierce Brosnan's third outing as James Bond. And of course, I can't do this alone. And joining me, a man who has pretty much become my de facto co-host for this series, Chris, the British Bond Addict. Chris, how are you doing today?
Not doing too badly. Josh, good to speak to you.
I mean, the listeners will just heard you last month with Bob, and that episode went off the rails, to say the least.
Yeah, you just know, a tad.
Fitting for Jonathan Pryce in Tomorrow Never Dies. I think it worked out very nicely. But we have a second guest joining us, first time to the Still Bonding podcast. And Chris, I believe you wanted to introduce our first time guest here.
Absolutely. Yes, this is a friend of mine I've known for quite a few years at this point, and to put it lightly, he is kind of a Goliath of Bond knowledge, which is why I think he'd be ideal for a podcast like this. He has the longest name on Instagram, at least that I'm aware of, and is the sole owner of the world's best Roger Moore impression. It's Kyle Barbeau of Easy Smiles and Expensive Watches.
How are you doing, guys? It's nice to be here.
Thank you for coming
now,
on the show, Kyle.
You just called me Goliath. Does that mean you're calling me fat?
or is he calling himself David? I don't know. We're going biblical here.
We'll stick with a Goliath.
A Goliath. Well, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Yeah, man. Thank you for coming on the show. I've been looking forward to this. The World Is Not Enough, a quick overview of why this one specifically is going to mean a lot to me. It was my first Bond movie. It was the Bond movie that made me fall in love with the franchise in general. But I'll get into all that in my personal histories. I want to start off with you, Kyle, since you're a first-time guest of the podcast. How did you first get into Bond, our Lord and Savior, James? But no, how did you first get into Bond? What's your kind of journey with Bond and the inspiration for your Instagram account?
Well, I started to get into the Bond films from a pretty young age because TBS used to air in between Thanksgiving and Christmas 15 days of 007. Mm-hmm. And I would just sit down and I'd always find time to check out the James Bond movies. I remember seeing License to Kill a bunch of times in the 90s. I remember seeing Thunderball a handful of times. Spy Who Loved Me was an early favorite. But it didn't really take hold until my 10th birthday when my grandfather took me to see Tomorrow Never Dies. Then once I saw that movie in the theater, it was everything that I wanted to be. Like, game over. Everything else out the window. I want to be that guy.
I fully understand how that film makes you feel that way.
It's a classic. And that was back when they really threw everything into marketing James Bond films in the United mm-hmm. States. Tomorrow Never Dies and Skyfall in particular were really, really heavily marketed in the US. And you couldn't escape it. There were billboards and there were signs on the train and there were, you know, subway posters of Pierce Brosnan riding a motorcycle. It was really something special to be, you know, coming into Bond during that era.
Mm-hmm. And so then in turn, what is your experience with The World's Not Enough? When did you first see it? Was it like, did you see it in theaters then? I'm assuming so, since you saw Tomorrow Never Dies. But what is your experience with this movie?
This one I saw, we tried to see it. My dad and I went the day after Thanksgiving in 99, and it was sold out because that's a really popular night to go to the movies, and we couldn't get in. So that really bummed me out. But then I remember seeing it Christmas morning after presents, after breakfast and everything. We got in the car and went to see The World's Not Enough, which is an appropriate movie to see on Christmas.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And, you know, as we all know, Christmas only comes once a year, or we thought we did.
Or sometimes not at all.
Or sometimes not at all. Chris, what about yourself? What's your personal experience and history with The World Is Not Enough?
It kind of ties in with me gaining consciousness as a human. by 1999, I was about 6 years old when the advertising first started coming out. And I was aware enough to know that after my dad watching the films every single weekend, that I was like, oh, this is a Bond film. I want to go see it. But I think by the time it released in the UK, I was still, I think, about 7 years old at that point, because it came out right around my birthday. Mm-hmm. And my parents decided against it. And I remember being sad at the time, but then probably getting distracted by Thomas the Tank Engine or something. So it was one where I ended up waiting for it to come out on VHS. And at that point, I was watching like Tomorrow Never Dies every single morning. So I was very excited. It felt like more of the same. And it kind of came out the same time that I started playing GoldenEye 64 and The World Is Not Enough on the PlayStation. So my overall consciousness of Bond was becoming like something at that point. So that's the first Bond film I remember like being aware that it was coming out, but it wasn't until like Die Another Day where I actually got to see a film in the cinema. And yeah, it's one where I almost wore the VHS out, loved it. I mean, it's Pierce Brosnan, there's BMWs, there's explosions, it was jokes I didn't quite understand. So I loved it.
There's Denise Richards and what's not to like with Denise Richards.
Mm-hmm. The way she says nuclear.
Somebody's tampered with the bomb.
I have to try and stop it.
I just realized I probably said that way too loud. My daughter is in the next room trying to sleep, and I'm just yelling, somebody's tampered with the band. Like full Midwest almost. Anyway, so my personal history with this movie is, like I said at the top, it was my first ever Bond film. It's the movie that made me fall in love with the franchise and the character and the world. And the way I discovered it was back in the day when people had cable here in the US. I don't know how it was for you over in the UK, Chris, but like for us here, we would get cable, and periodically cable companies, when they came down from their ivory towers, were ever so gracious enough to give you a free package of, like, you know, Showtime or HBO, or like you could like sample it for like a month. And back then, those channels, those premium cable channels, would get movies shortly after they appeared in movie theaters and cinemas. And apparently, they had The World Is Not Enough on. My dad's a James Bond fan. He was the one that kind of first, almost inadvertently, like he didn't like sit me down and be like, here, son, here's a man that you probably shouldn't model your life after, but you're going to want to model your life after. But pay attention to that fashion. He's handsome as shit. He never said that to me, but I'm sure that's what he would have been in any case. But no, he was watching it, and he taped it on like one of those tapeable those
I used to do that all the time.
That's how I had all the Star Wars films. They're all on a very rickety, very poor quality recordable VHSs.
It's such a core memory for me. We recorded it, we taped on it, and I think even after that I taped some other film, like it might have been like a John Wayne movie or something like that. I can't even remember, like, but that VHS got a lot of play because I was a big John Wayne fan as a kid, because my dad was a huge John Wayne fan, and then obviously James Bond. So I watched The World Is Not Enough a lot on that, and I remember so much so that was I don't know exactly when I would have seen it, but I I know it was in between when this movie came out, which actually I probably should have brought the date up for that. I don't, was it 99 or 2000?
99.
That's what I thought. It came out in like late 99. So in between when this movie came out on November 8th, there we go, November 8th, 1999, and when, oh my gosh, Die Another Day came out in 2002. I completely brain farted on that for a second. And I saw Die Another Day, just like you, Chris, in theaters. That was the first Bond movie I ever went to see. And then I guess because I was so like enraptured with like high school at the time, I skipped over Casino Royale, which I honestly to this day regret with every fiber of my being.
Oh my God, don't say that in front of Kyle.
I will gladly berate myself, sir. Like, I'm so like, Casino Royale is now one of my favorite Bond films, but it is one that I didn't see in theaters. It's the only one since I started going to see Bond films in theaters that I have not seen in theaters. So I'm kind of bummed I missed that. I saw Quantum of Solace, which made very little sense by the time that after watching that and not understanding anything that had happened prior in Casino Royale.
I've seen Casino Royale so many times, I can quote it verbatim. I named my Instagram after a line from the movie. And I still don't understand what's going on in Quantum of Solace. So don't worry about it.
Quantum of Solace, I remember when I revisited all the Bond films for Skyfall, because I started getting back into James Bond right around Skyfall. I don't know what caused me to do it, but I was getting really into it. So I totally legally downloaded a bunch of the movies, very legally. And I watched all of them over the course of like a week. So I had Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, and I watched them back to back in like a 4-hour chunk. And Quantum is a lot better when you watch it right after Casino Royale. It feels like kind of like the second half of the story almost. Either that or watch it in short succession. You watch Casino one night and Quantum the next or something like that.
That's what everybody says, but that doesn't change that herky-jerky frenetic editing style that I can't stand.
It's a little too, as we all know with Bond movies, they are reactionary to the popular things.
Of course.
Not all the Bond movies, but like Quantum is very much a reaction to Jason Bourne and the Bourne movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like extremely. And then, you know, Skyfall's kind of like the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
What is it? Spectre would be Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
And No Time to Die is Logan.
Is No Time to Die like Logan? Yeah. Okay, so I didn't watch Logan, so I didn't
catch that. It's a good flick.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I've heard it's really good.
You like X-Men, it's a good one.
I will have to give it a watch at some. I haven't. I'll be honest. Here's a cinema sin. I've never seen the original X-Men films, like from the 2000s. The original, the OG with Hugh Jackman and whatnot.
First two are great. Skip X-Men 3 or whatever it's called, The Last Stand. That's awful.
That's it. You're going to get insane whiplash when you see OG Wolverine by Hugh Jackman. It's something.
You mean he hasn't aged because Hugh Jackman's this flawless specimen of a man?
No, it's just the fact that like he is so ripped in the later films. And in the first one, he looks, by comparison, like just a regular guy.
Yeah, it's like the Pierce Brosnan physique versus the Daniel Craig in Casino Royale physique.
Ah, I see. Yeah. I see. But anyway, we should get into The World Is Not Enough now. That is my backstory with The World Is Not Enough. I love this movie, and I will continue to sing its praises as we work our way through it. But we are going to kick this off. And so the movie opens with Bond going to a bank in Bilbao. Is that Bilbao? How do you pronounce that?
Bilbao.
That's what I figured. But I'm glad it's not Bilbo, because that reminds me of either Lord of the Rings or actually my mother-in-law's cat, and that's a lot less dramatic than Bilbao, Spain. Anyway, in Bilbao, Spain, and he is going to meet with a banker in Bilbao, Spain, about money that a friend of M, Sir Robert King, is owed. He's trying to get money back. I'm confused with a little bit of the setup of how it's coming back to him. Like, I understand the plot that revolves around the money, but how did he invest in something and then it didn't pan out, and so they're giving him the money back? I'm a little confused on that aspect. Do you guys know?
It's the money that he was going to pay Renard for Elektra's return before she joined him. And, well, I just spoiled the movie. I'm sorry. But before she escaped, he was willing to pay the ransom and, you know, gave them the money, and Bond is retrieving it.
But that wouldn't that contradict what happens later in the movie, where M basically convinces him to not give them the money? And then, because that would make it seem like, so where's the money? If he had the money ready, where has it been for the last, like, however many years between the kidnapping and this movie's plot?
That's a darn good question. But I guess
that's what I'm confused.
Renard would have had to have had it in order to booby trap it.
That's what I'm, yeah, I guess that's what I'm a little confused about. But it seems like the bank, actually, here's a line. It was not easy, but I have retrieved the money. So King had some money somewhere. A bank, through seemingly shady means based off of how aggressive they act towards Bond when Bond gives any mild passive aggressive comment. It seems like they're not a reputable institution per se, but Bond is there to pick up the money for King and Sir Robert King, as we meet later on. And he's being a little coy with the banker. He's first compliments him, you know, he's a, you know, oh, it's a pleasure working with a Swiss banker or whatever. And then once the guy starts giving him grief about it, he's trying to get the name of the person, I guess, that gave them the money. That's must be where it is. He's trying to get the name of where he got the money from. And the banker's like, I'm just trying to be a middleman and do the honorable thing and get the money back to its rightful owner. And Bond then turns that quip around and makes fun of him for being a Swiss banker. And a fight scene ensues based when tensions start rising. Bond sets off a flashbang hidden in his pistol with a button, with a detonator type of thing in his glasses. Really cool bit of spy work. And it starts a crazy fight scene. And before we continue on with the fight scene, I want to get your thoughts on this scene, like things you like, things you don't like. Kyle, we'll start with you since you're our first time guest. Like, what's going through your mind as this scene is happening?
One of the things that I love about this opening, and I think it's one of the best pre-titles in the entire series, but it's the first time that the gun barrel opens up directly onto James Bond. James Bond is the very first thing you see after the gun barrel, which is really cool. And then you want to know, hey, wait a second, why is he wearing glasses? What, James Bond doesn't wear glasses. That something's going on here, and you're not really sure what it is, but right from that moment, you know you're hooked.
I double down with that as well. Obviously, we've not seen too much like kind of basic spy things, like not in comparison to like Dr. No, where the scene where he's, you know, putting the hair against the door. But just to see him wearing glasses, you immediately think, oh, we're seeing spy Bond at this point. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how just one little change, and again, we get the payoff with it as well. I think it's a great little introductory scene. And again, it's framed so beautifully by my favorite select. Like, there's The Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough have the best style of gun barrel music. So to go from that then into that intro scene, I think is just brilliant.
I think it's my favorite gun barrel in the entire series is The World's Not Enough.
Yeah, I'll be hard pressed to find a better one.